Hi, welcome to Thomas Anonymous with Tommy Natoli. That's me. Today's show I have crowning from my loins for you the last chapter of this memoir. Chapter 23, me. All right, let's not waste any time today. Let's get right into it. Everyone, buckle up, because as always, it's going to be a truthful ride. I'm Tommy Natoli, and this is Thomas Anonymous. Chapter 23, me. I was sucked back into the magnet town known as Pine Mountain Club. PMC, fool! I was a professional couch crasher for a few months, sleeping on the floor of miscellaneous coworkers. I always loved a floor bed. Not because it was comfortable, but because nobody could really hold you accountable for paying rent. That is a classic slacker, mooch off people move. Oh man, look at me, it's so sad, I'm sleeping on the floor and I have nowhere to go. You can take the boy out of Wareham, but you can't take the shady Wareham out of the boy. Working again, back at the charming Screaming Squirrel restaurant, I was able to, after a few months of floor sleeping, rent my own little room at the Flophouse. That wasn't the real name, obviously, but it's an accurate description of the place. It was an old hotel that had only about 4 rooms, which included the upstairs rooms that were the fancy apartments with bathtub jets and fireplaces, while the downstairs rooms were just 4 walls and a toilet. Living in the Flophouse alongside me was a pregnant lady, another lady with like 4 kids, a divorced dad, and then gay-ass me. I rented one of the downstairs rooms, and it was my own little bachelor pad. I scavenged for furniture, and my new local wackadoodle character friends came through with donations to furnish my new place. I got a TV that was one of those big old square ones that has to sit on the floor because it's from 1972. My couch was just a section of a sectional. This was the kind of place where if you spilled something and ran to grab a towel, I'd be like, no, dude, we're not gonna ruin a good towel. It had no kitchen, but I had plenty of mini kitchen appliances, including a toaster oven that I left 2 pizza bagels in burning and smoking while I passed out on the couch shit-tanked. Things were going along just great. I didn't have any real direction, but I worked hard, partied hard, and was doing summer outdoor theater, so life was pretty good for a 25-year-old. I decided after years of restaurant experience as my only line of work that I needed a change. If I have to go fetch you one more goddamn side of ranch, I'm gonna throw you off a bridge. Ugh. Why couldn't you know you needed napkins 5 seconds ago when I was already here at the table? I needed a big change, and I knew I had to act quick before time flew by and I was a 75-year-old cocktail waitress in Laughlin with bleached hair. No offense. PMC only has 2 good, decent places to work. The water company and the clubhouse. The clubhouse is like a country club for the property owners association. There's a fancy bar and a bistro and a pool and horses and the stupid golf course. I knew I had no redeeming skills to work at the water company, but I knew I could somehow con artist my way into the clubhouse if I really wanted to. Mission get the fuck away from the Screaming Squirrel was a go. I read in the ho-dunk local newspaper that the clubhouse was hiring lifeguards. I could probably do that. I mean, I did start a lifeguard certification class once when I was 18 in Wareham, but quit after day one when I realized it was all cardio, and I didn't even know how to swim real strokes. The ad in the paper said, "We'll provide certification and training." And as I read those words, I had a flashback of that lifeguard class and how much I hated it. But then I looked up at the restaurant I was in my disgusting apron with smears of food shit across my crotch and thought, screw it, I'm gonna be a lifeguard. I interviewed at the clubhouse and crushed it. I'm awesome at interviews, and you can read all about that in my next book titled 37 Jobs and I Quit Them All, except the 2 that fired me. The clubhouse loved me, and before I knew it, I was driving down to stinky-ass funk Bakersfield every day to my lifeguard class. This course sucked everlasting donkey dick, and it wasn't a class, it was a boot camp, all day, every day. I'm still bitter. It was the best and worst experience of my life. It was the worst because it was a challenge physically and mentally, but then it turned into the best because I rose up to every challenge and surprised the shit out of myself at my own determination to abandon the restaurant biz. The first day of lifeguard boot camp, they had cuts. That's right, they were sending bitches home! They made you swim 25 yards freestyle, dive down for a brick, a bunch of bullshit stuff, and they were cutting people after each round, like, thanks, better luck next time. Ugh, I started to panic because I couldn't really do lifeguard swims. I remember a lady yelling at me, "Side breaths!" And I was like, what the fuck are those? I looked over to the other swimmers and started to copy the way that they were breathing. I somehow used Jedi mind powers for them not to see my lack of skills, and I made it through and I didn't get cut. Yes, me. Every night my body was so sore and reaching my arms above my head was just not an option. But somehow, someway, I kept on going and I made it through every dumb test, including diving down 14 feet of water and grabbing a loser off the bottom of the pool. At one point during that challenge, I remember treading water after many, many failed attempts at surface diving to the bottom, and I just told myself, I don't want to deal with grease traps and onion rings. I need to suck it up and do this. What's a surface dive? Oh, that's when you are treading water and then dive to the bottom, but you dive down feet first. So you have to keep your body straight and use your arms to go to the bottom of 14 feet of water feet first. Then, once at the bottom of 14 feet, you have to drag a human being up to the surface. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. As insane as this task seemed, I just told myself, you are gonna do this. I'm certain. I passed all the physical tests, and I passed the written test with a 100%. Me! For the first time ever in my life, I gave a 2-week notice and I dumped the screaming squirrel. Bye, screaming squirrel. Jeez, big deal. Who cares? What's the point? The point is that 8 months before lifeguard camp, I was trying to scheme and hooker my way through life. The point is, I was starting to grow up and work for what I wanted, even if it was delayed kicking in at age 25. Bam! I was a lifeguard. Me. I loved my new job. Basking in the sun on my lifeguard chair, gazing into the blue sky and perfect mountains, breathing in that crisp, clean air. Oh, and yeah, I gotta watch these kids too. Shit. Marco! Polo! Ugh. My last few months working at the Screamin' Squirrel, my kitchen mom, Mama Diaz, kept telling me that I should do stand-up comedy. This was something she had said occasionally to me throughout the previous year during my impromptu performances of Acting Like the Boss's Wife and my mockery of customers. Like one night, this stupid bitch customer came in to pick up her to-go order, and as I cheerfully gave her the plastic bag, she blurted out, "Ah, this bag is wet!" To which I replied, "Oh, let me get you a new one. Gotta watch out for the water, it melts witches." I love Mama Diaz. She would always tell me, you gotta do stand-up, I'm telling you. And I was really hesitant as I was a dramatic actor, you guys. Hello, I do Shakespeare in the Park. I did some research on the internet and started looking at some workshops in LA that I could go to. There was improv, stand-up, everything you could ever think of there was a goddamn workshop for. I was drawn to a class in Pasadena at the Ice House Comedy Club and started stalking all the info I could about it. The teacher of the class did a radio interview that someone had posted online and I listened to it over and over and over again. I worked an extra 2 weeks at the Screaming Squirrel just so that I could afford the $300 comedy workshop, but I eventually signed up and as scary as it was, I did it. But before I could start doing comedy, I had to fuck a few more mountain people. Things were shifting for me in such a good way. I started my new awesome job, and like a real grown-up, I started dating. No highway blowjobs, real dates. Technically, mountain dates aren't that far from a rest stop blowjob, but hey, baby steps. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Thomas Anonymous, let's have a quick recap of all my mountain dick. Garrett. Garrett was a late 20, early 30-somethinger who fell in love with me just days after stalking me at the Screaming Squirrel. He was attractive, rugged type of guy, and the only turnoff with him was how into me he was. We hung out at my flophouse apartment and drank and drank and drank, and then before you knew it, I was at my neighbor's door shit-faced asking to borrow a condom. I'm a safety girl. Borrow a condom like I'm gonna give it back. Ha ha! The days following our drunk fuck, he got a little too clingy and told me he was falling in love. Then I had a nightmare that he was watching me from outside my apartment, and then I dumped him. Bye, Garrett! Jack was my next gay mountain find. He was the son of a lady who had inherited a fuck ton of money from a guy that she was taking care of. Jack was batshit crazy, but he was my age, attractive, and seemed to have his life together, so I was in. We had some casual dates and didn't hook up until the third or fourth date. Classy, right? When we did finally dive into some heavy petting, that's when Jack's drama hat came out and all of a sudden he was drama, 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 drama! Quick example, he got mad at me for something and decided to climb up onto the roof of his mom's house and not come down. Fine, suit yourself, you big baby. Bye, Jack! JC was my next fling and he was my unicorn of men. I loved JC. It was 4th of July weekend in PMC. I was a tanned lifeguard and star of community theater. I was killing it! I was working one of my last shifts at the Screaming Squirrel, and Mama Diaz came down from the bar and said, "You're getting laid tonight!" Oh, am I? Yeah, three gay guys just showed up at the bar. I got the fuck upstairs ASAP, and sure enough, there were three fabulous gay guys at the bar. Two of the guys were super hot, and after a night of drinking at the bar, I was on my way home with all of them. We partied at their cabin, and I ended up grinding it out with two of the hot ones in the kitchen. Side note, dancing with two super hot gay guys is way more fun than a rest stop blowjob. Eventually, at the end of the night, it was just me and JC left alone. He was so fucking hot. Tall, dark, handsome, 22, rockin' hot body, and soon enough I would find out that he also had a giant dick. Like 9 inches minimum. And thick. He was from Colorado, and all guys from Colorado, in my experience, have great cocks. We had a hot, sweaty, passionate hookup. I mean, I still get wet today thinking of JC. The next morning, I woke up with that feeling of, oh my god, he's gonna hate me. So I peaced out before anyone could wake up. When I got to my car later that day, there was a note on it from JC telling me that he liked me and he wanted me to visit him in LA. Oh my god, I was totally in love, well, in like, infatuation. You know, when you really, really, really like someone and it's all you can think about and it gives you stomach pains. Yeah, this was it. This was my first real boy crazy crush. As planned, I went down to LA to hang out with him, and we had a fun night out with his friends. We gay bar hopped, went to a club. He wanted to show me all the gay stuff of LA. We hooked up again that night, except this time he wanted to be the top. And again, not much experience with this at the time, but I really liked him, so I was like, okay, and I let him. Don't forget, he is 9 inches and thick, so this didn't last long. Then I made the biggest rookie mistake of all, and I told him that I'd never really done that. Ugh, big mistake. Huge! Nothing bad happened in the moment. In fact, he ended up finger banging me to show me that anal was good and I could get off. Thanks, JC. But the next morning, after we had morning blowjob time, I left and we never saw each other again. I was very desperate in my attempts to get together again after that, and he rightfully blew me off. Nobody wants to be somebody's first. I get it. Bye, JC. Sad face. Then there was Gay Mountain David. Ugh, what a drag Gay David turned out to be. We met at the local bar, of course, and being cliche gays, about 10 minutes into meeting, we were sucking each other off outside in the beer garden. You can take the boy out of a rest stop, but yeah, you get it. David was super attractive, dark hair, blue eyes, and a total drunk who liked to steal and pop pills. Oh god, I gotta get off this fucking train like yesterday. David and I were together for 1 week, and it felt like 3 years. We were at a house party and he started crying because he just wanted us to hang out. Like, we are literally hanging out right now. Ugh, I left him there. Bye, David! Enter Daryl, stage left. Daryl was 40, professional, attractive, and totally nailed tight in the closet. He had a son that was my age and that worked at the coffee shop next door. So I'm lucky enough in my lifetime to have authentically had the thought, oh my god, I totally fucked your dad. Well, he fucked me, but whatever. Daryl loved me. We met at the bar one night, and within 2 hours, he was picking me up out back and taking me back to his place. He snuck me in the back since he had his niece and nephew visiting. It was shady and I was super into it. Daryl worshipped me and I loved it. He was hot for 40 and the fact that he had an ex-wife was pretty hot too. Yes, daddy, me. He took me to Vegas one time and put a pile of cash in my pocket and I gambled and smoked cigarettes indoors until the cows came home. I ended up going home with $600. Profit. I also bottomed on top at the Sheraton Hotel at Universal Studios. Bottom experience, check. Thanks, Daryl. We were on and off for about a year, but the most memorable thing about Daryl is that one time he blew me in the kitchen of the Screaming Squirrel. Take that, Board of Health ratings. A+. Haha. I had to break it off because Daryl was too in love with me. Hey, what can I say? When you got it, you got it. Bye, Daryl. Love and light, bro. The important thing here is not dancing with two hot guys or bottoming on top at a Sheraton, although those things are fabulous. The important thing here for me was that I was no longer just showing up and taking my private spot out. I was starting to navigate the world of actual dating and spending time together and learning real names. Real names? Meanwhile, comedy class was going great. I would drive down once a week to go to my class and I was really loving it. The teacher was a comedy veteran who taught us how to take our ideas and turn them into jokes. I remember she said, you can't sit down and decide to write a joke about a peanut butter sandwich. It has to be authentic. It has to be true. She told us to go up on stage and talk about the thing that makes you the most uncomfortable. So I went up there and just decided to let go, not care, and talk about the big gay elephant that's been in the room with me for 25 years. I went on the stage and I said, so I'm gay, and then I paused, but nobody seemed to care. Like, it wasn't the breaking news I thought it was. I stared out into a room full of people staring back at me, and they were unaffected by my words. Their lack of a reaction was exactly what I needed. Nobody threw anything, or yelled to kill the gay, or anything. I realized how not a big deal it is in this liberal metropolitan place and how being here was a great opportunity for me to just be myself, start over, and just live. It was the comedy class that brought it out of me to not care anymore and to verbalize all the things I didn't want to talk about. There was no more selective sexuality with the, oh, I'm bi, or I'm pan, or yeah, I want to sleep with your girlfriend and you. Comedy helped me in more ways than most people can imagine. It made it so that I could take the one huge thing in my life that I was so scared, ashamed, and nervous to talk about, and talk about it in front of crowds of strangers. Now, quick side note about comedy workshops. Not everyone can take a workshop and then bam, you're a comedian. You cannot teach somebody to be funny. Like, I don't care. You cannot teach somebody to be funny or have stage presence or any of that. I'm sure people who are not funny and have no charisma take comedy workshops all the time, and whatever, good for them. One more quick honk of my own horn before this memoir ends. Honk honk. I was already funny, already an experienced performer, already had been writing for years. So for me, the workshop just took everything I was already doing and knew and gave me a place to put it all. It taught me how to edit the fuck out of a story and to get to the goods. Edit, edit, edit. Starting to dabble in stand-up comedy made it so that I was out to the world, out to everyone. Oh shit, I still haven't told my family. Oh, all right, fine. I told my mother I was gay in a Mother's Day card. Hey, I figured if I'm gonna ruin her day, it might as well be her special day. She never said anything to me. She only said something to my sister. Oh, you know Tommy, he just wants a reaction from me. Like, no, Mom, if I wanted a reaction from you, I would have blown my boyfriend in your front yard. I'm kidding. He will never meet my mother. That little tidbit is true. I did send her a card telling her I was gay, but it's also a bit from my first 5-minute set that I wrote in that workshop. Me. Clearly, I am not close with my mom, but I have no regrets, and if I had to do it all again, I would still send that card. But maybe this time I'd follow through on FedEx and some shitty cat litter. Now I just had to tell my dad, which I wasn't worried about at all, cause come on, my dad's the cool one. Of course, my dad was going to my first stand-up show down in Pasadena. The end of the class finishes with a grad show on the main stage of the comedy club. My first 5 minutes on stage is hard to remember, and I keep the DVD of it hidden in a box far away because watching it would be so, so, so painful. I just can't. But from what I remember, it was a very cliche first time on stage kind of performance. Like, I talked about my shitty apartment, and of course my dick, and then I revealed halfway through that I'm gay. And I don't even remember what the jokes were with the gay stuff. Oh wait, of course I do. Hold on. So I'm a typical gay guy, you know, really bad at relationships, really good at anonymous sex. I'm so bad to the point when someone says, hey, my name's Joe. I'm like, whoa, Joe, slow down with the names. I think we're moving a little too fast. And scene. I killed it, though. I killed it, as most people do at comedy grad shows. And honk honk again, I also had the most people in the audience. I had about 20 people drive almost 2 hours from the mountains to see me perform, and that was, like, such a special treat. I'm gonna skip the part where I spent the next 2 years wasting my life and energy at bringer shows and learning the hard way about the comedy scene and how I'm not a comic. But that first night of comedy was phenomenal. To have the support of so many people was inspiring and it felt super duper amazing. After the show, I was fawned over like one is after a high school production, and that felt awesome, but I really just wanted to find my dad. He was in the audience that night, and that is how he heard the gay news. My mom got a sassy Mother's Day card, and my dad got a cover fee and a 2-drink minimum to find out I'm gay. You're welcome. Dad was drunk when I finally found him and my screaming squirrel friends. He hugged me and told me that he loved me and was beyond oversupportive. We all went to a burger joint for some food, and after that, as we left, my dad said he wanted to drive in my car with me. I love my dad forever, but he was shit-tanked, and the last thing I wanted to do while sitting on my post-show cloud nine was invite Drunky McDrunkface in my car for the ride home. I fully lied to him and said that my car had a bunch of stuff in it, and I made my friends take my drunk dad home. Haha, me! I needed to be alone. Not only had I just done something that felt so awesome with writing material and having people laugh at it, I had done it about very personal stuff that I struggled with for so long. It was not only a weight being lifted off my soul, it was an emergence of a new me and a new road to go down. For the first time in my life, I felt like there was a path for me to go down that felt right. That night on stage, it felt like there were magnets under my feet. There was like a palpable force that I could sense, and I just knew like I know that I was doing exactly what I should be doing. I made the long drive back up to the mountains, and as I felt my adrenaline settle down, I couldn't help but reflect on my life. The struggle and pain of hiding and hating myself. The years of trying to change the way I felt and thought. As my memory montage flickered through my mind, I started to cry and then sob uncontrollably because I was finally free from all of that chaos. It was that night on my ride home that I was born again. Not in a Christianity cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs kind of way. For the first 25 years of my life, I spent so much time pretending and molding myself to what I thought I should be or what I thought others wanted me to be. That person was no longer inside of me. I shed the skin of that old life and emerged as my true self. I could have my authentic reaction to things. I could be feminine if I wanted to. I could live life without a filter. I can do anything! Except math. I really suck at math. But if I want to, I can answer the door for the pizza guy in heels and a wig. I can play Barbies and braid their hair while I sit and watch TV. I can even put a t-shirt over my head and pretend to be a goddamn mermaid if I want to. I can be me! Me, me, me.
Did it! Yay! Thank you guys so much for listening to chapter 23.
Me!
And that was it. That's the entire memoir of Thomas Anonymous, all 23 chapters. I know, crazy, right? This chapter was interesting. I mean, I feel like this chapter kind of needs a little bit more editing, but I just kind of needed to crop it out and have it be finished. The big thing here for me was, you know, starting comedy, because it was kind of like the thing that got me out there to, like, it forced me to deal with what I didn't want to talk about, you know. And just for the record, you know, as we bring up comedy in this episode and how I partake in it, I just need to go on the record and let everyone know that I'm a dabbler of comedy. I'm not a comic, I'm not a comedian, I'm not out there on the road booking gigs. I probably could be, you know, but I'm a dabbler. And for those of you that don't know, a dabbler is somebody in the comedy business that isn't consistent. Surprise, surprise, me. But they're not, you know, they come in and out, and that's what I've been doing for, God, fucking 10 years now. But you know, I'll do a lot of comedy for 6 months and then I won't do any for 3 months, and I'll do comedy for a year and then I won't do comedy for a year, and then I'll do comedy for 2 years and then I'll take 6 months off. I don't know if you've noticed this, but I have a problem with follow through. And for me, you know, the comedy scene is just, it's a boys' club. You know, for me, comedy, being on stage in front of people, like, that's the easy part. I like that part. I like the writing by yourself part. That part's great. The part I hate is networking, which is like 90% of the entertainment industry. You know, you have to network to get places and get jobs and get booked on shows. And I don't want to turn anyone off, but, like, the worst thing for me in the world is talking to other comedians. Like, love and light, bless your heart, I get it, we're all fucked up, but, like, that's the struggle for me. It's hard for me to find a comic that I actually enjoy, so, no offense. So, yeah, that's my struggle with comedy. I'm in and out, I'm a dabbler, you know, whatever. But, so in this chapter, I talk about how I started doing comedy, which was with a comedy workshop. And just so you know, I didn't name drop in the chapter, but that workshop is my very good friend, Bobby Oliver's. If you're interested, you can look her up on Facebook and Twitter and all that fun stuff. She still does her workshops in LA. They are awesome. I haven't done them in a long time, but again, it's what started me. So, check her out. Yeah. Don't I have a website somewhere for her? Oh yeah, bobbyoliver.net. And she owns and operates Dow Comedy Studio here in Los Angeles, which is where I perform most of the time. Most of the time. I mean, basically, that's the only place I go. That's my downfall in comedy right now, is I go to one place. I go to the same open mic. I do the same shows. And, you know, that's not at all productive, and I know that, so glad we could talk that out. But, you know, by Bobby Oliver saying in her workshop to me, talk about what makes you uncomfortable, like, that right there changed everything for me. Like, it changed how I looked at things, it changed how I wanted to express myself, and, you know, so that's that. That's chapter 23, me. That's the whole memoir from start to finish, from chapter 1, Jesus Loves Me, Duh, to chapter 23, me. There's a lot in between there, and I think it's, you know, it's a good little chunk of, Look, I guess a memoir is just a theme. And this, I tried to stay consistent with the theme of, you know, self-acceptance, finding myself, struggling with society and culture's demands of being masculine. All of those things plagued me really, really deeply and for a long time. So this whole memoir is like barfing all of that out of me. And honestly, now that it's done, it feels so fucking awesome. Like, it feels like you can finally leave all that behind. Like, there's a period at the end of the first 27 years of my life, and it's over now, which is fucking phenomenal. So, moving on. The show's still gonna go on, even though I don't have the memoir anymore. I'm still gonna have stories to tell and things to talk about and all that fun stuff. So, Thomas Anonymous will live on, you guys. I have been up to some stuff. I've been traveling the past couple weeks randomly. I 2 weeks ago went to Mexico, Puerto Vallarta, with my boyfriend. And here's the thing about Mexico. Well, here's the thing about... I was just rudely interrupted, you guys. I can't even deal. Anyway, so my favorite thing about leaving Los Angeles, period, to go anywhere is that all of a sudden, when I leave Los Angeles, I'm no longer overweight. Yeah, it's fucking great. People actually see me. Like, I land in Mexico and suddenly I'm like a sex symbol people can't stop staring at. You know, and it's weird to go from like nobody seeing me. Like, I live in West Hollywood. I live in West Hollywood, which is like land of the gay, land of the skinny, land of the abs. And so basically, I've been invisible for 7 years. And when I land in Mexico, it's like suddenly, oh my God, people can see me. It's great. And I don't know what's going on. I'm like, oh, what? Oh, I'm not in West Hollywood. Got it. So it was great. I loved it. Mexicans checked me out. And I just want everyone to know I'm moving down there next week. So my Mexico trip. Here's the thing. So my boyfriend thinks that getting strung out on Xanax is a fun time. Like, that's his idea of going on vacation. So I spent most days chilling by the pool, relaxing by the beach, and then in evenings, I would just wonder if he was going to overdose and making sure he was breathing. It's a great time for everyone. The anxiety was awesome. And that wasn't even the worst thing that he did on the trip. The worst thing that happened in Mexico was that my boyfriend decided to take a shirtless picture of me, topless. And of course, I made a big stink about it. Like, when he took the picture, I specifically said, "Don't post this on Facebook." He said, "Okay, it's just for my mom. I'm just going to send it to my mom." I'm trying to be a good sport. So I'm like, "Fine, send it to your mom." 10 minutes later, it's on Facebook. Me and my fat and the Mexican beach behind me. I was furious. I said, "Don't post." I reported him to Facebook. I did. I was like, "This picture's offensive. There's nudity." God, so rude. Also in Mexico, I really was trying to get a happy ending massage. So everyone told me that in Mexico, like, oh, they all give happy ending massages. I can't even tell you how many massages I had in Mexico. Nobody gave me a happy ending. I don't know if you have to, like, ask for it, but I was super offended. So that's pretty much that. Oh, you know what? Facebook told me today. This was weird. Because usually they do a better job with this. But Facebook told me today that 10 years ago, I signed up for Facebook. So it's like my 10-year Facebook reunion. And then they put together like a little video. You know, they do little videos with the pictures. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is going to be 10. It's going to be a 10 years montage of me. They showed me three pictures. Three pictures in 10 years. Like, wow, thanks, Facebook. The only thing I like about having Facebook for so long now is that I can at least go back through my photos and show people how good I used to look. Like, it's like proof. I'll be like, no, oh, hold on a second. I'll show you, like, my arms from 2009. They look great. All right, I'm going to wrap it up with that. It's a short and sweet episode. It's because the memoir's over, you guys. I got to start working on next week's episode. Well, not really. It's kind of already done. But whatever. The point is, there's going to be a show next week. Yes, the show must go on, you guys. Also, I usually record this on the real stuff, but this post chapter chat I'm recording on my phone, so I apologize if it sounds like shit. But, you know, it's the whole don't care season 2 integrity thing that's happening. So, yeah, the memoir's over. It will live on forever. I hope to write another memoir one day. In fact, I already know the theme and where I want to go with my next memoir, but it's gonna be some serious time to let that simmer, because I don't feel like doing that right now. But Since I'm not writing essays every single week, I'm going to try to do weekly shows now. Sometimes it'll be me just talking to my diary. Sometimes I'll have my boy Brenda on. Sometimes my mother spirit guide, Michelle with one L. Lucky for us, I can give us right now a cliffhanger for the next episode, and I hope I can make most episodes like this because I feel like the universe was pushing the show in that direction. So let's just hope things keep falling into place. But basically, my straight guy Brandon and I were in Vegas together last week. It was for work, so don't think that it was a great time because it wasn't. It was all right. I mean, we did manage to have a small Vegas adventure, smoking weed, running away from hookers, and we met a guy, a straight guy, who said that he'd done some, quote, gay/bisexual stuff, unquote. And he wanted to share his story with me and with Thomas Anonymous. So, next week, we will have an anonymous, quote, straight, unquote, straight guy joining us to share his own Thomas Anonymous stories. I have a lot to say about what happened, what he said, blah, blah, blah. It's a whole thing, but that's going to be all on next week's episode. So, thank you guys so much, everyone who's listened to each episode. It really means the world to me that you're listening and that you enjoy it. You know, the feeling of producing and creating something that people actually like is pretty awesome. So you guys have made that great. I want to thank Michelle with 1L, who has supported and encouraged me and this project for years and years and years now. She remembers when this whole thing started and she told me I had to write it. So I love you, Michelle. I'm going to call you in like 10 minutes, girl. You can follow me on social media at The Thomas Anonymous on Facebook and Instagram. Twitter is at Tommy Natoli because some cocksucker has The Thomas Anonymous and Thomas Anonymous. And yeah, it's just too many letters. So drama on Twitter, you guys. I want to thank bensound.com and Majestic Color for providing the music in the show. I'll be back in 1 week with a new episode and, as promised, a straight guy talking about gay stuff. Okay, bye.